I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Thanks for listening to the Prime Time with Isaac and Suk podcast, brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center, doing the right thing since 1952.
Hear this, right now.
Welcome.
Prime Time with Isaac and Suk.
What is going on up here?
I never know, man.
Unbiased.
Shut your mouth.
Uncompromised sports talk without the sugarcoating.
I hope you're happy. You wasted everyone's life for 30 seconds.
Isaac Ropp and Jason Sakanik.
Now shut up and let me do my job.
The best in sports coverage.
This is going to be great.
This is Prime Time with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
Hey, what it do? What's up? Good Thursday. It is Prime Time with Fabricio and Giancarlo. What's up back there, Mike? How are you?
I'm doing good. Getting ready for football season here after the fantasy draft yesterday. I'm getting all amped up now.
Yeah, I heard. So help me with something. I love fantasy football. I'm a big fantasy football guy. I play in the league every year. Who are the top five guys this year? Like, who's the... In the fantasy draft, the actual NFL players.
Okay, number one is far and away Antonio Brown. He is the guy that everyone seems to be taking number one overall.
Okay.
Also up near the top, you got Adrian Peterson or Todd Gurley. People are switching between the two, picking them first.
Ooh.
And then it goes to the other receivers, Odell Beckham Jr. and Julio Jones and... DeAndre Hopkins are usually the other receivers that are going up near the top five there. So yesterday I got Julio Jones number four overall with the draft pick there in my draft yesterday. So it was kind of like that. I got to double check what the actual order was though.
Rodgers, the top quarterback?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Rodgers. Nice. Well, I hope you got a good team. I love fantasy football, but I have done no homework yet, and I think our draft is coming up. At any rate, I am out here at Pumpkin Ridge once again today. If you missed yesterday's show, we were out here with Dave Bartu having a good time. It feels a little hotter today than it was yesterday, I think, a little bit. Maybe pushing 100 degrees, but it's nice in the shade, and there's all kinds of nice shady places to sit, including VIP tents and beer gardens and such out here. So we'd love to see you out here today or tomorrow or over the weekend. It is round one of the Winco Foods Portland Open, and I was just checking the leaderboard, and the leader is 8 under. The second place guy is 7 under, and I've officially gone ahead and tapped him my guy because his name is Seamus Power, which is
yes.
The only how great is that? And I guess he just got back from Rio, and he was I think he's Irish, and he competed in the Olympics. So he just got back, and he comes out here and shoots 7 under. I think the only thing better than being named Seamus Power would be being named Seamus Powers, but we won't hold that against him. That's my guy. The scores are low. I was out there watching a little golf earlier. I don't know about you. Actually, maybe I do know about you. You're not a big golf guy. I can sit and watch people who are really good at golf, pro, amateur, or otherwise. I could watch them all day. I'm fascinated by it. These guys are amazing. I saw a guy nearly dunk one on hole 12, and it's an exciting tournament because out here are the top 156 players in the web.com tour, and on Sunday here on the 18th green, just behind us here, they're going to hand out 25 PGA Tour cards. These guys are going to the big leagues next year, so it's a great tournament. Seamus Power is our guy, and we hope to see you out here. gosh, what are we doing today? We've got a lot. We're going to talk a little bit about academics versus athletics and funding. Oregon State revealed their new locker room today, and it looks incredible. Meanwhile, down at Oregon, not to be outdone, they threw out the Mario Ta Sports Performance Center. They unveiled that in Eugene, and I got to tell you, man, I saw the promo video for that Mario Ta Sports Performance Center, and it is so state of the art. It is so nice that you sort of don't even know what anything is. That's how nice it is. And the Oregon State's locker rooms look great. So we're going to get into a little bit of the arms race talk today. We do have some NFL stuff. We're going to learn who the latest up-tempo no-huddle team is in the NFL. Kind of interesting. A big blow to the offensive line for one Super Bowl hopeful. And maybe a little Hard Knocks talk. Dave Bartu was out here yesterday, and if you missed it, collegefootballmatrix.com. He was with me for 3 hours, so we appreciate his time. I'm going to get him a nice little bottle of scotch because I know he likes the brown stuff. I'm going to get him that for coming out here because, man, when we dig into college football with him, it is never a dull moment. It is exciting. There's all kinds of stuff. He had all kinds of predictions yesterday, so I would encourage you to go back to 1080thefan.com. You can download our show from yesterday if you missed it or you care to hear Dave's opinions on college football. It was 3 full hours of college football for the most part, and it's the Les Schwab podcast at 1080thefan.com. But just to review a couple of things, he's with me that the good bet to win the Pac-12, even though it is wide open this year, we think it's going to be UCLA. And that's mainly due to schedule, if they can get over the Stanford hurdle early in the season. He thinks if any team, listen to this, if any team of those top 5 or 6 teams is going to drop off, he believes it could be Oregon because he's worried about Brady Hoke. And you know, it's not that Brady Hoke doesn't know how to coach. It's not that Brady Hoke is not a good defensive coordinator. His point was the speed of the offenses in the Pac-12. Nick Alioti really had something going defensively before he left with his rotation of players and building that depth. Does Brady Hoke have that philosophy? Will he use as many guys as he can against the up-tempo speed offenses in the Pac-12? He's worried about that. And, you know, he also said that the Oregon talent is back to where it was pre-Chip Kelly. You know, it's back to Alioti, which is still very good, but not college football playoff contender good. So he's a little worried about Oregon. He believes Washington is still a year away, talent-wise anyway. Washington State, 8-4 or 4-8, not surprised either way. If Oregon State is going to win 3 or 4 games this year, it needs to come in the first 6 weeks because the Beavers' schedule is really difficult after that. But he called the Beavers over Boise State. So he has Oregon State potentially, if they can beat Minnesota, which I think that's going to be a good football game. Oregon State might start 3-0, but ultimately the schedule could catch up to him. Elsewhere in college football, he said the ACC comes down to Florida State, Clemson, plain and simple. That game's in Tallahassee this year. Florida State is poised to make another run. Big Ten, it's still Ohio State and everyone else, even though they only have 6 returning starters. Michigan's not quite there yet. You can put them in the same category as kind of a Washington. You're buying futures in them, but not quite this year. And then in the SEC, he had a stunner pick, LSU over Alabama. He says LSU is the team to beat in the SEC. He said the single best hire in the offseason was LSU hiring that defensive coordinator from Wisconsin. The guy's dynamite. So his playoff predictions were Florida State, LSU, Ohio State. And then the fourth one, you know, you got to look at the Big 12. If the Big 12 has a champion that goes unscathed, it's going to be hard to keep them out, even though their non-conference schedule for most of their teams is not very good, and in-conference is weak. It's not a strong league, but he's thinking maybe Oklahoma there, should Oklahoma beat Ohio State. Could be an undefeated TCU. He thinks Baylor's going to be bad. And maybe it's a Pac-12 champ that only stumbles once. That could be that fourth spot. But he's got Florida State, LSU, and Ohio State in the playoffs. So if you missed any of that, it's worth a listen. Just a little recap there. You can podcast at 1080thefan.com. So coming up next, I think what we'll do, we'll get our poll question in. We're going to take a little bit of a look inside what happened at Nebraska last year. I know a lot of Oregon fans are pumped up about that game. Not to overlook Virginia, because another thing Dave said was he agreed with me that we should probably watch out for Virginia in that second game of the year for the Ducks. But Ducks are headed to Lincoln, and there is a lot of trepidation in Lincoln. I mean, I went to a game there last year, and man, the fans were all over them and all over Mike Riley. Just in my little section, it was really sort of wild to hear the fans talk about that team. But they have things pointed back in the right direction under Mike Riley, and there are a few reasons why that is and why Nebraska fans, even if they may not believe fully in Mike Riley, should be optimistic. So we'll get to that coming up next. Then we'll talk academics versus athletics and the arms race in college football. Some NFL stuff after that. And Mikey, we got a good football game tonight. As a matter of fact, you know, you know me in preseason games, but we're cut short tonight. We're off the air at 5 because we have the Seahawks and Cowboys, and we're going to see Ezekiel Elliott. And if there is, for the first time, and if there is a preseason game to actually care about, it's game 3 because it's the starters who play more in that game than any other preseason game. So it might actually be pretty good tonight.
Yeah, I'm a little bit excited for it. I want to see Ezekiel Elliott, although the reporters are saying he's only going to play like 4 or 5 plays at most, so we won't see too much of him. And then I'm also kind of curious to see that kid, the running back for the Seahawks, CJ Procese, I think you say, is how you say his name. The team has been raving about him, and I kind of want to see him play because I drafted him yesterday.
I tell you what, well, Rawls is supposed to be back. And
well, yeah.
You have Christian Michael too, but
it was my last pick. I was like, hey, they're talking about him, I'm going to draft him. Let's go.
Are you as tired of the Seahawks squawking and running their mouths as I am? I mean, I saw yesterday. I mean,
isn't
Doug
that
Baldwin,
kind of just what the Seahawks do?
God, it so is. I guess that's just Pete Carroll. The way I like Pete Carroll. I think Pete Carroll's really good. I just don't have anything against him, but the way he runs his program, I think it lends itself, you know, to these personalities speaking out. And God, I am just so tired of hearing Mike Bennett run his mouth. And I know Doug Baldwin even told him to shut up the other day. And, you know, he got into it with Richard Sherman and, of course, the whole Richard Sherman fiasco after the Niners game. I'm just – Russell Wilson is immensely likable, in my opinion. Other than that, I don't think many Seahawks are. And yeah. I hate to say that.
Well
– I really do.
I know, but that's kind of that,
– Actually,
that's,
I don't hate to say that.
Well, I know. We all know how you feel about the Seahawks but and the Seahawks fans. But I think that's just kind of how they've made their success the last few years. That's how their bread's buttered. They talk a lot of smack, but they back it up. And at least for me, even though, yeah, it could be a little bit annoying, they back it up. And I'm like, okay, yay, if you want to talk all that and you keep winning and you keep making the playoffs, then good for you.
Yeah, they're pretty awesome. So we've got the Seahawks and the Cowboys coming up at 5. Let's get started. College football is coming up next. It is 3:12. We're out here at Pumpkin Ridge. Isaac Ropp with you. Mike Lynch back in the studio. Suk is back on Monday from his vacation. You're listening to 1080 The Fan.
Live from the Winco Foods Portland Open, presented by Kraft Heinz. This is Primetime with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Pumpkin Ridge. Here's the poll question today, 1080thefan.com, as always brought to you by Widmer Brothers Brewing, Steelbridge Porter, a true Portland original. Which, this is very provocative, very thought-provoking today, folks. Just wait.
Okay.
Which former local coach will do the best, excuse me, in his newest endeavor? Chip Kelly with the 49ers, Scott Frost at Central Florida, Mike Riley at Nebraska, or Nate McMillan with the Pacers? Oh.
I like how
I
you
came
slid
up with
that in there.
Well, yeah, did I miss anyone? Because I was thinking last night, I came up with that after a few beers last night. And so I thought, what the heck, I'll put that up because I was wanting to talk about Mike Riley at Nebraska today. I knew that. So then, you know, that'll funnel into what we're going to talk about. But it's actually a pretty decent question. I mean, I think Chip Kelly's going to be better with the Niners eventually once he gets better talent. I think Scott Frost is going to be really good at Central Florida.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, thank you. He could parlay that into a big-time job. And, you know, the question is, how do you think Mike Riley's going to do at Nebraska? And, you know, I think a lot of people do think the Pacers are going to be a player in the East. I don't know. I think Nate McMillan certainly is going to be a different coach with them than he was with the Trailblazers. He has Paul George, so they'll probably be pretty good. I think it's a pretty good question.
Is the poll question just for this year or in general?
Mm-mm.
Just this year?
No. I suppose I should have clarified. No, I think, you know, long-term.
Okay.
Who's got the best shot?
If it's long-term, I actually like Scott Frost at Central Florida, to be completely honest with you. The talks around the program are saying that he's getting a lot better recruits. It's in a great recruiting ground anyway in Orlando, but they're really buying into the system. And it feels like a team that could be another Boise State or another Utah or, I don't know, just any mid-major team that really, really kind of boosted itself up with good recruiting and good coaching and an interesting scheme. And I think that Central Florida might be able to do that because it's in Orlando. And I think that Scott Frost can do it too. So out of those four, in terms of long-term, I actually kind of think it might be him.
Well, they have good facilities there. There's no doubt about it. I really am interested to see how Mike Riley does it in Nebraska. I think, well, and Chip Kelly with the Niners, but sticking with the college football thing, I think it's because of our personal relationship with him. I really root for him. I hope he does well there. I can see why he took the job. I know he's getting older. This is probably it for him. And I really want to see him have just enough success to shut people up. I mean, I don't want it to snowball on him and hit, you know, this happens all the time in professional sports and college football where it snowballs, you never get your feet under you. Like, in other words, if they have another bad year this year, I mean, they only won 5 games last year. If they have another bad year this year, I'm not sure he survives. And if he does, you know, all the pressure next year, I would just want him, I want to be able to see him stabilize it enough in order to really have a shot at Nebraska, because I think people love Mike Riley. I think recruits want to play for Mike Riley. They like him. I think the parents are comfortable with him and his staff. We know how he operates, and I think he can recruit there. With those facilities, Nebraska is still a name in the Midwest, obviously. I think he can get kids there. What ultimately may do him in, though, is just the unrealistic expectations there, and it sounds like it's already kind of squeezing his neck a little bit. But, you know, they think they have to win 10 games or more and be all Tom Osborne-y all the time out there, and I'm just not sure that's realistic. But hopefully Mike Riley gets some time to I think, do what is more realistic at Nebraska, and that is, look, they're not Tom Osborne's Nebraska Cornhuskers, and they never will be. College football has changed. I think the way he can succeed there is be a Bo Pelini, where you're always good, right? 8-9 wins. But then every 5 years, have that one special season where you are in the Big Ten title game, where you do win the Big Ten title game, and you get over the hump, and you at least are in the conversation for the college football playoff. I think if he does that, you know, once, twice, every 5-6 years, I think that's more realistic. I just don't know if that's going to suffice with the fans back there. But the reason I bring it up, besides the poll question, is there was a really good article by Andy Staples. And these college football writers bounce around so much. We see him all the time. He's at Pac-12 Media Day. All the games we go to, he's there. I don't know who he writes for. I think maybe he's still with Sports Illustrated.
I think he's still SI, yeah.
Is he? Yeah. Campus Rush or something. That's SI, right? I think he's Sports Illustrated. Anyway, he's a nice enough guy out there. He's been covering college football a long time. A national writer, and he wrote a pretty good article on what happened at Nebraska, because remember, they came out and lost that game. I think the first game was the BYU game, and they were at home, and they lost in a Hail Mary. And then they lost to Miami in overtime. There was one other really tight one.
Well,
I saw them lose to Wisconsin on a last-second field goal.
Yep, lost to Illinois 14-13, lost to Northwestern 30-28. So.
And they lost at Purdue. Yeah, I mean, it was just...
Well, that was 55-45, but yeah, they lost that game too.
Yeah, I mean, they were 3-6, and that doesn't happen at Nebraska, and people were calling for his head, and I was sitting there at the Wisconsin game, sitting up in a nicer section of the stadium, and one young guy got up and called him Mr. Rogers, said, "I've had enough of Mr. Rogers." This was the Wisconsin game. It didn't even hit rock bottom yet, which was the Purdue game. And so it was an interesting year. They won 5 games. They went to a bowl game and beat UCLA. But up until this article, I'd never really known kind of what the dynamic was there. But here's what Andy Staples said. He said the key was, and these are often, you know, elements that are overlooked. We kind of view when coaches take over a program like Gary Anderson at Oregon State or Riley at Nebraska or whomever, we kind of view it all the same. And all the dynamics are absolutely different. And at Nebraska, the key was the players that were already there were used to winning. I mean, they won nine games a year. They fired a guy who won nine games a year. So when Riley came in, it wasn't 100% buy-in, particularly from the older players, because those guys knew how to win. They were, the veterans pushed back. They were saying, hey, prove to us why we should listen to you. And the early season close losses that we talked about compounded that problem. So Mark Banker is quoted in the story and said, to Riley's credit, he did not lose the locker room. He could have very easily ran off some of the veteran players and went with a youth movement and established himself that way, but he didn't. He kept the locker room together. They hung in there, and the veterans ultimately, after they fell to 3-6, and they lost at Purdue, which Nebraska doesn't lose at Purdue, Riley kept them together. So the older players who initially resisted the new coaches stopped resisting at that point, because what did they have to lose? They were 3-6 and they were at rock bottom, and they might as well try to salvage something. Well, they go on to win two of the last three, including the win over Michigan State, which was huge for them. And with that win, that was a comeback win. If they don't win that game, they don't go to a bowl, and this is all different. But because they won that game, they ended up losing to Iowa at the end of the year. But because they beat Michigan State, they got invited to a bowl game. Now, again, they only won five games. This was because there weren't enough teams 6-6 or better to fill all the bowl slots. So they got lucky. But what Andy Staples writes is that Mike Riley said that they needed that bowl game more than anything, because basically it was camp all over again. But this time there was trust. The players knew the coaches knew the players, and so it was almost like they started all over. They knew better how to use their quarterback, Tommy Armstrong, who is definitely not a pocket guy at all. He needs to throw no more than 15 to 20 times a game. And so it was a new lease, and they needed that extra month of practice, and they got it. And lo and behold, they go into the bowl game, and they beat UCLA. And now this year, and they look good doing it. And this year, many pick them to be in the Big Ten title game. And so I know Big Red can be a little unrealistic with their expectations, and they think Tom Osborne's still roaming around down there. But if they can stay patient, Bartu yesterday was saying that the talent level at Nebraska is getting better, and they are in a wide-open division. They're not in the division with Michigan, Michigan State, and Ohio State. Their biggest competition right now, it seems to be, is Iowa in that division. It's not like the SEC. The Big Ten's pretty wide open. I think long-term, we know what makes Mike Riley good, and I wonder if maybe they aren't optimistic about what Mike Riley is going to do at Nebraska. But ultimately, hopefully this doesn't happen, that the unrealistic expectations that they have down there sometimes won't do him in. I hope he gets enough time. So, poll question. Which former local coach will do the best? Chip Kelly with the Niners, Mike Riley with Nebraska, Nate McMillan with the Pacers, or Scott Frost at Central Florida? Vote at 1080thefan.com. All right, up next, Oregon State has new locker rooms. We take a look at those. And Oregon does not want to be outdone, so they reveal the new Mariotto Sports Performance Center, which has been unveiled. We'll take a look at those things when we get back. It's 3:28 here at Pumpkin Ridge. Let's go to Mike with SportsCenter.
16 Winco Foods Portland Open. This is Primetime with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
You know, my Weather Channel app only says 94 out here at Pumpkin Ridge.
Well, that's probably a lie, Rob. Let's be honest.
Yeah, it's lying to us. I don't trust it. I need a better app.
Well, no, that is the best. That's the best weather app, guaranteed.
I
use that one too, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's not 94 out. But it might feel like a lot hotter to you sitting under a tent, I assume.
Well, you know, yeah, I am in the shade under a tent, but there's not a lot of breeze. I'll tell you what, I was over there on hole 12, which is a little par 3 out here at Witch Hollow, watching the players earlier, and the breeze was picking up. So I don't know if any of the afternoon guys are going to score quite like the morning guys, but certainly don't feel the breeze here. And I'm sharing ear sweat with, I believe, am I sharing ear sweat with Dirt or Sprague? I think Dirt's ear sweat. Yeah, with these headphones. Feels great. Feels great. I mean, it's just...
You might want to clean so your clean. Ears out when you go home.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
I think you're right. Man, do you see these Oregon State locker rooms that they revealed today.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff, man. It's nice to see Oregon State, which is, I mean, I'm certain. So Utah put in a new facility or a new big football building, $30 million. I know Colorado has been slow but has updated some stuff. I think Oregon State's the last in the Pac-12 to crank up the facilities. It's been a long time coming if they want to, you know, if they want to compete. And so they revealed some of the new locker room looks today. And, of course, they've got that new veranda there in the end zone. Looks really, really, really nice. And then down at Oregon, they unveiled the Mariota Sports Performance Center, which, to be honest with you, I don't even know what it is. I saw the promo video and some pictures, and it's so state of the art that you don't really know what anything is. It's like they show you a room with these egg pod type things. It looks like something out of Mork and Mindy. It looks like a bed. Maybe something is done in there. I don't know what they're doing in there. It's just flashy beyond belief. It's state of the art. You know how Oregon does it. All donated by Phil and Penny. That's for sure. But it's rather over the top. And I was thinking because we just a few weeks ago took Meatball, who is my 16-year-old son, down to Oregon to tour the campus for college. You know, he's going to be a junior this year, so we're getting a little head start. But he said, you know, we were both off, my wife and I, so let's run down there and go on a tour. And it was the first time I had been to Oregon's, been actually on Oregon's campus other than at Autzen Stadium. I've actually not spent a lot of time in Eugene. I feel like it's just far enough. And oftentimes, if you're going just that far, you're heading out to Bend or Central Oregon or something. But we toured Oregon's campus, and man, it is unreal the disparity in just the buildings, the academic buildings, and what they look like and feel like versus the sports facilities. So if you had been in a coma and just woken up after 20 years, I wonder what you would think about all of this. I think you'd be confused, and rightly so. It doesn't really compute when you think about what higher education should mean compared to freaking football. I think somebody who woke up from a coma would just be like, "What? How has college football gotten this big?" And look, I'm not complaining. I find it a little uncomfortable. I mean, football brings in money, I suppose. I mean, football does bring in money. It brings in most of the money that these athletic departments spend outside of donors to put facilities like this up. And, you know, the rest of the sports don't make a ton of money, so the football money is used to pay for the other sports. And so when you look around at the net result in most of these athletic departments, they're not self-sustaining athletic departments. Very few are. I mean, Oregon's unique. I think they're close to even, or at least they make it appear that way in terms of their profits from athletics each year. But Phil Knight, obviously one of a kind. But think about the schools where they spend academic money to help fund athletics. Like, Oregon is unique. It's in its own little sort of little category. Most schools, they spend money from the university to help fund athletics. And how off kilter is that? At least at Oregon, you have a donor who pays for it. So I was looking up some numbers today because I saw that Mariota Sports Performance Center. I thought, golly almighty, go walk through the science building at Oregon and some of the other buildings. And then go look at that. It looks like you're in two different planets. And it's mainly due because, you know, due to just how nice the sports facilities are at Oregon. But the national average, this is astounding. The national average, not Oregon, just average, a university spends $92,000 per athlete on average. You care to guess how much they spend per student? It's,
ooh.
Well, go ahead and guess. Go ahead and guess. $92,000 per athlete.
$30K per student?
$14,000.
Ooh.
Per student. And in the SEC, get this number. Listen to this. In the SEC, they spend $163,000 per athlete to roughly $13,000 per student. And this is how out of hand that it's gotten this arms race. And now a school like Texas can spend that because their athletic department is different and they bring in a ton of cash. They're a big brand. They're self-sustaining. They make hundreds of millions. They may even be pushing $200 million. I don't know. 95% of the other schools try to be Texas, and that's the problem with this college football arms race. Yet we keep waiting for a school to say, you know, it's not worth it. We're not going to do this. We can't keep up. And no one is saying that. UAB, Alabama Birmingham, tried to shut down their program and couldn't. There was too much outrage. They don't make any money. So this idea that college athletics, namely football, are a boon to universities is, it's just wrong. And maybe at Texas or Ohio State, maybe a few others, but to most schools, it's a drain on the university. And I just wonder if this will ever be corrected, if this will ever change. What is the end game here? And as sports fans, why don't we really care about this? Is it just because, kind of like we hate the NFL and how the NFL operates, but we love the product, so therefore we're not going to, you know, we're just going to stay in our lane and ignore Roger Goodell and watch the games because we like the games? Shouldn't we be uncomfortable with all of this stuff? And at Oregon, it is just a prime example. And this is true. I went to Kansas, and it's true there, too. They just built new football facilities. So if you go tour the campus there is very nice. It's very pretty. Nice limestone buildings, but they're older. And then you go to the football facilities, they're a lot newer. But Oregon, I think, it's probably the greatest example of the stark contrast between high-level athletics and academics just by walking on campus and walking through some of the academic buildings and then walking through some of the sports facilities.
It's interesting you say that because for me, and maybe it's because Syracuse is a private school, but I didn't have that. I didn't notice any of that when I was there. There are older buildings for sure at Syracuse, but they're also constantly building new ones. There was a brand new dorm that went up that was super weird and modern looking. They built a whole new architecture building, but they also have the Carmelo Anthony Center that he donated money for that they practice in for basketball, and they built a new football one too. So I think maybe because it's private and they just take donor money and put it into all the various things, but it seemed kind of balanced to me. Maybe it's a public school thing where it's that big of a gap. I don't know.
Well, and I think it's hard to really get the numbers on how much some of these athletic departments are dipping into academic funds in order to survive. I mean, again, Oregon's unique because of Phil Knight. You know, you mentioned Carmelo Anthony. You know, if a donor wants to donate for a sports facility or donate to the football program, that's his money. But, you know, it makes me a little uncomfortable. I wanted to bring it up today because the Sports Performance Center at Oregon is unreal. And Oregon State is spending a lot of money with their new reveal today. Does athletic success come at the expense of academic success? I'm not sure, but it doesn't really feel like athletic success benefits academics much to me, anyway. And that's not right. I mean, we say we want to make college more affordable. It costs up to 500. What do they say the costs of college are? Up 500% or something since the 80s. We say we want to improve our higher education system and our education system as a whole versus the rest of the world, yet we celebrate the opening of these over-the-top, not even remotely necessary, football performance center-type buildings at schools like Oregon. It's just, it's really bizarre to me. I don't know if I'm the only one who thinks this way or if you want me to shut up and talk football because that's why we love it. We love football, but I'm not sure why we can't get smarter about this academic-athletic relationship. It's a little puzzling to me. You can text 55305, the fan text line. Coming up next, we're going to find out who the latest NFL team is to go up-tempo, no huddle. They could be very fun to watch this year. We'll tell you who that is and run through some other NFL notes when we return. 3:44 out here at Pumpkin Ridge on The Fan.
Portland Open, presented by Kraft Heinz. This is Primetime with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, let's go to the text line here. I'm just a little uncomfortable with all this big athletic spending. That Mariota Sports Performance Center, I don't know, man. The academics versus athletics and the spending—it's really wild. $92,000 per student athlete on average in the United States schools spend on an athlete. 13,000 on a student per student. I mean, that, what's wrong with this picture? Now, I'm going to go to some texts, and I'm going to read both sides here. A lot of people have opinions. One says I should stop talking. Another says that asks how many times I'm going to mispronounce Mariota. No, it's Mariota, right? Isn't that what it is? Could have sworn. Hello?
You mean this?
Mariota.
Mariota.
Isn't
sorry.
That how you say it?
Yes.
Mariota.
Mariota. Mariota.
Marcus Mariota.
Like the Willametta. Yeah, I don't know what he's talking
Willametta.
About. It's Mariota. Schools have done it. It's called the Ivy League. That, I give you a rather loud amen. What else do we have here? Wasn't it revealed that they did make money? Most of them, football makes money, but the rest of the athletics lose money, track and field, swimming and whatnot. Well, yeah, that's the whole thing. Is here's what's happening. Let's just, I mean, this is what it is. You have big-time football programs that bring in a ton of money. But because the big-time football programs have to pay for the rest of the programs that do not bring in a ton of money, they essentially show you a net loss. They show you a net loss, or they show you, the books look like, we made a little bit of money, but, we have to pay for all these other programs, and they're beneficial to the university and its student-athletes. so we really don't have that much money. So in a way, some of these programs can cry poor. But then you get a donor like Phil Knight, or you get a donor like T. Boone Pickens, and you put up these ridiculous facilities. The TV contract, and I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. Again, a donor can spend his money however he likes, but these TV contracts are getting so big, millions upon millions of dollars are coming into these universities, and nobody's seeing a dime with the exception of the athletics. Where is the partnership with the university and academics? And they say all this stuff. They say all this stuff about how, when a team wins 12 games and goes to the college football playoff, enrollment increases, and the sports programs that are really good, it means X, Y, and Z to academics. Studies don't show that. Studies don't show that at all. And again, Oregon is off the hook a little bit here because they're unique. They have Mr. Nike. They have Phil and Penny. Most of the time around the country, the money that is spent, some of it, and from what I understand, it's 10 to 15% perhaps on average, comes from the university. The academic side is actually funding this sort of wasteland of spending to try to keep up with the Joneses and try to be Texas when nobody's Texas. I mean, you've got Texas, Ohio State, maybe a private school like USC. You got Oregon's unique, Oklahoma State's unique with T. Boone Pickens. Most of the other schools, 95% of them, they can't do it. It doesn't pencil. It's a bad business model. Yet, we just sit here, and we love our college football, and we don't really care. But if you're griping about education and the state of education and higher education, this is one you need to be paying attention to. It's really, really, really... It's just puzzling to me. I don't know why that can't work better. Text 55305. I have no problem with the TV money being used for the facilities and upgrades for athletic departments, but they should never be dipping into academic budgets. I got news for you. They do. Another one says, you underestimate the draw of students' choice of university based on the football success. More enrollment equals more revenue. Wrong. Studies do not show that. The costs of higher education are through the roof, and you are overestimating how many people give two rips about football when deciding what school they're going to go attend. What else?
Why I think the only thing that it does help in that sense is it puts that school on the map for students, but they're not going to choose it based on the athletics. But if you grew up in Oregon, you're gonna, I want to go look at Oregon because I love their football team. Then you go decide based on the majors and all the other stuff that's tied into it. But you're not going to decide because of the football program. It just puts it in the top of your mind.
Yeah, I feel like that we're overvaluing even that guy. I mean, a lot of people don't. Again, we live in the red section of the USA today. It is just the little red section. We overestimate because we're in the bubble of just how big sports are and how far-reaching sports are, and they can be. But when you're talking about students at major institutions and kids going off to college, I just don't think football matters quite like we think it might because we care about it. What else do we have here? Let me read a couple more of these, and then we'll move on to the NFL. It's crazy, Rob. They can't pay the athletes, so they just buy them things to use while on campus. That's from CP in Portland. I know student-athletes have a demanding schedule. However, does the chemistry or engineering major have any less of a demanding schedule? And let's see, where did the rest of that one go? And in the grand scheme of things, which one contributes more to society? Our priorities are all mixed up. I'd agree with that. I'll read a few more of these and see if there's any more we should get we should get on the air here when we come back. But there's a lot of feedback coming in. You can text 55305. Now, what happens if you, like somebody, this is a good one. We'll leave with this and think about this and we'll come back and talk about it. But what happens if you eliminate non-revenue sports? I mean, Cal tried to do this several years ago. We've talked about it on the show where they said baseball program, the historic rugby program there, they'd won multiple championships. I want to say softball was on the lam and they had three or four. And they said, if you want to save these programs, you have to go raise money. Well, they all did. They all raised money. And I think the baseball program raised something like $20 million. Why is that not a bigger story? Why are more schools not doing that? Hey, if we're going to offer these non-revenue sports, and somebody said it best earlier, they said the Ivy League does it right. Absolutely. But then again, at the Ivy League, you're limiting, it's just not this big arms race in football. It stays in its lane. But it's already so far out of its lane in major college football, we're never putting that genie back in the bottle. But eliminate non-revenue sports. What would happen to the money? Let's say you've got football and basketball and a few other sports that, on their own, with donors, bring in money. So all of a sudden, you have athletic departments turning major profits. What would happen to that money? Does that money go back into academics, or does that money go into funding the next Mariota super high-tech performance center? I don't know. I have my doubts that it would go back to academics, even if you eliminated non-revenue sports. And that's, you know, that's kind of the problem. So text 55305. We'll read a few more of these, and then I've got some NFL notes coming up. We're at Pumpkin Ridge. It is 357, and this is The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.